Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Hey, good morning. Welcome. Friday underway. This is the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. And so glad to have you along. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life and as we get closer and closer by the moment to the big day, Christmas, and the celebration of the birth of Christ and the, I guess, the fruition, if you will, of the Advent season. It's now 6:04, and we're glad you're with us. Coming up later this morning, more great news about opportunities for you and for me, our respective families and households, to come on board and support the good work of Angel Tree. My goodness, the generosity of Faith Radio listeners has just been extraordinary, and I've mentioned that several times, but I continue to be, I guess, pleasantly surprised. What's the word here? I mean, I expect great things, but wow. I mean, we are closing in several days in advance, by the way, closing in on the goal that we set for ourselves for the number of children, the number of families to be sponsored through the Angel Tree program. And if you're hearing about this for the first time, Angel Tree, of course, is an outreach of a group called Prison Fellowship Ministries. Angel Tree specifically seeks to connect children with their parents when their mom or their dad or both are incarcerated. The families become estranged, and we, you know, so often in the discussion, the broader discussion of criminal justice in our country has to do with the crime and the punishment and the sentence. And once somebody gets sent off to prison, oftentimes we don't think a whole lot about what becomes of that individual who is incarcerated. And probably even less common that we think about what becomes of the family. But kids become estranged from mom and dad, and Angel Tree steps in. Has been for many, many years, and provides transformative inputs and resources, and really can change the entire direction of a family lineage, which is really cool. So I will tell you more about Angel Tree. If you want to come on board, give a call right now. You'll get a live person. And it won't cost you very much money. You'll be probably pleasantly surprised how little money it requires of you to come on board and sponsor family and make the difference. The toll-free number is 1-855-59-ANGEL. Real easy to remember, 1-855-59-ANGEL. So more on that coming up later this morning. Also, I am very excited. I was privileged to speak to this gentleman earlier this week. His name is George Barna. Chances are you know that name, George Barna. George Barna from the Barna Group, which used to be known as the Barna Research Group. They are really kind of the gold standard, if you will, in terms of organizations that survey the opinions and perceptions and perspectives of faith-based groups, mostly in the United States, but elsewhere around the world as well. And George Barna, a very astute, well-educated man, he's been conducting surveys and doing opinion research for literally decades. George Barna, by the way, was, I guess the book that really put him on the map back in the early 1980s was a book that he wrote called The Frog in the Kettle. Do you remember that title? The Frog in the Kettle. And based on the assumption, I guess the truism, if you will, that if you put a frog in a pot of boiling water, the frog recognizes immediately that he's in boiling water and he'll seek to jump out. If you put a frog in a pot of cold water and then slowly heat it to a boil, well, the frog doesn't know what's happening to him, and eventually he gets boiled to death. And in that book, George Barna was surmising that Christians in the United States of America kind of are, proverbially speaking, metaphorically speaking, the frog in the kettle. Well, George Barna has a brand new book out. I spoke with him earlier this week. He'll be on the program today at about 7:35 Central Time. He's got a new book out called U-Turn, Restoring America to the Strength of Its Roots. And I think he's going to have some pretty hard-hitting but very insightful and thoughtful things to say about the present state of our culture, how the old frog is doing in the kettle, how warm is the kettle, all those kinds of things. So I'm looking forward to that. Hope you'll, if you have to step away from the radio or the mobile phone or the iPad or whatever it is you're listening to, I hope you'll come back at 7:35 Central Time. So that's on the way. Oh, it's just about half an hour from now. This is very cool. I always enjoy our discussions with Bob Waliszewski. Bob Waliszewski from the Plugged In Movie Review Circuit. You can find him at PluggedIn.com. You hear his commentaries periodically here on Faith Radio. I'll be talking to Bob about the movie Exodus, Gods and Kings. What an interesting discussion that's been touched off with the release of this movie. All kinds of discussions about, well, you know, did the Exodus really happen? And I mean, those are those are theological and historical questions that get debated frequently, have been debated for centuries, I would maintain. How literally do we take these biblical accounts of ancient Israel and the early church, for that matter, in the New Testament? But anyway, Bob Waliszewski will review Exodus, Gods and Kings, among other things, and we'll talk a little movie, motion picture, and entertainment over the holidays. So all of this and more on the way. And I hope you'll stay with us for the entire program. But you're here right now, and that's a good thing. It's now 6:09 Central Time. This is the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. Thanks for being here. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 6:11 Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. Coming up, some very interesting new research that has been published just recently by Christianity Today magazine about racial reconciliation in America and the different perceptions that Christian clergy have about that issue, racial reconciliation. We'll tell you about that coming up in just moments here on Faith Radio. As for the Angel Tree Outreach Program, that number to call, 1-855-59-ANGEL, 1-855-59-ANGEL, to find out how you can help out. Let's listen now to the story of Greta.
When 8-year-old Greta's father went to prison, she lost more than a dad.
We lost our home, our cars, our family was ripped apart. My mom had went to the local social services and asked for help, and they told her that they were not responsible for a prisoner's child and handed her a box of cornflakes.
For this hurting, forsaken family, not even Christmas would bring hope, because it was just like any other day.
We just didn't do Christmas. I mean, we didn't have trees, we didn't have decorations because we couldn't afford it. Christmas just wasn't an option.
Families of inmates, who've done nothing wrong themselves, live in a reality that most of us will never know. In an attempt to survive, Greta's mom made a fateful choice.
And then that's when my mom married the man that she did, feeling like she had no other option.
Young Greta paid a steep price.
I was molested by my stepdad the entire time my dad was in prison. I didn't feel like I could tell anyone, and I felt dirty, and it was hard growing up like that.
But one Christmas, hope arrived from a surprising source. Gifts from Greta's incarcerated father.
Angel Tree came knocking at my door, and they had brought all kinds of boxes and presents, and, you know, they had put it from my dad. And it really kind of gave me hope that maybe, you know, there was a light, there was a way out. And it just seemed like that moment that somebody really cared about me.
A little girl feels love, real love, for the first time. Looking back, that has made all the difference.
I was full of rage and anger and even hate and bitterness. And now it's just full of love and life and Jesus. And I want to work with underprivileged children. And I don't think that I would have known that I could do that had it not been for Angel Tree.
Today, God has healed the pains from Greta's past, even reuniting with her father. Still, her heart breaks for every child who has a mom or dad in prison.
I am sure that there are thousands of other little girls and little boys that are going through what I have been through, and they're hurting, and they feel alone and like there is no hope. But this program really does touch more than people know. You may think you're just giving them a Christmas or buying them a present, but you are doing so much more than that. You are changing a life.
Call that number and make the difference, won't you? It's toll-free 1-855-59-ANGEL. 1-855-59-ANGEL. As I said, it'll be very straightforward. It'll be a streamlined process. Won't take too long on the phone. And you'll find out firsthand just how affordable it is, how little it costs you in terms of monetary resources, in terms of money. You'll find out how little it costs you, but what an enormous difference your money can make. It's the Angel Tree Program. That, of course, from Prison Fellowship Ministries. 1-855-59-ANGEL. We're almost at our goal. Won't you help us get there? It's now 6:16 on the Faith Radio Network. Friday morning underway. We're glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill, and thank you for listening.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 6:18. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm up Austin Hill. Weekdays morning. Hold on. Let me start over. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. Sometimes the mind-to-mouth motor coordination is a little diminished, you know, with the... My colleagues are snickering at me on the other side of the glass enclosed booth, and understandably so. This was not a part of dress rehearsal last night, and I just thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. Paul Perot in the News Center. Appreciate that very much. Sometimes the cold medication that I'm taking, I'm sure I'm probably the only person in your midst with, yes, they're putting it in air quotes, cold medication. Sure, Austin. I'm probably the only person that you've heard of that is maybe struggling just a little bit with some sinus conditions and cold and flu symptoms and those kinds of things. Not real badly, fortunately, but, you know, 'tis the season for such things, right? Anyway, I am taking some over-the-counter kinds of things, and, well, it just slows down the synapses a little bit. Aaron McIntyre, if you need to, go ahead and do a Google search on the word synapses. It'll be an eye-opening experience. Okay, you know what that means. Very good. Christianity Today magazine has a very interesting article published as of today, and they're reporting on some research about perceptions over this issue of racial reconciliation among evangelical Christian pastors. Now, what's very interesting here, I'll tell you what CT says about this, Christianity Today. Here's the synopsis. African-American pastors, black pastors in America, are less likely than white pastors to believe that the Christian gospel mandates racial reconciliation, but African-American black pastors are more likely to be actively involved in racial reconciliation. About 77% of white pastors in America say that the Christian gospel mandates racial reconciliation. Only about two-thirds of black pastors, 64% of them, say that the gospel mandates reconciliation. On the other hand, half of African-American black pastors strongly agree that their church is directly involved with racial reconciliation efforts, while only about 32% of white pastors say, yes, our church is actively pursuing racial reconciliation. Isn't that interesting? One category of pastors, the white pastor, and by the way, if you are Hispanic, especially if you are Asian or you're Indian or Middle Eastern, I just want to acknowledge that you don't fit into either one of these categories. And it's frustrating to me that so often the dialogue about ethnicity and culture in America is separated black-white. We are far more diverse than just black and white, and I want to acknowledge that. But it's interesting to me, you've got the white pastors, and these are among evangelical clergy, white pastors saying, absolutely, the gospel requires us to pursue racial reconciliation, but we're not doing it. You've got black pastors saying, the gospel does not require it, but we're pursuing it anyway. That's a synopsis. Now, it seems to me, and this is how complex things get, and I know when I ask these kinds of questions, Sometimes even, well, I'll just say it, sometimes my associates get very upset with me for asking probative questions. But it seems to me part of the equation here that's being ignored in this article by Christianity Today and maybe even this entire research project that was undertaken by a different organization, part of the equation here is that we probably, many of us, have very different definitions of what exactly racial reconciliation is. I mean, that's how confusing our culture is becoming. And I think as Christians, as followers of Christ, we need to understand that our common language is not even so common as it used to be. Case in point, and I had this come up recently with some dealings that I was having. There was somebody was speaking to me, and we were talking about a prospective interview here in the program. But somebody was speaking to me and saying, "Well, you know, white Christian America needs to understand that black America is not just going to get over it." Now, that was a statement made in the context of the social and racial upheaval in New York, in Ferguson, Missouri, and in Florida, for that matter, and elsewhere around the country. We've seen a lot of racial tensions flare up here in the era of post-racial America just in the last 3 or 4 years or so. But this was specifically relative to the uprisings earlier this year in Ferguson, Missouri, and secondarily in the state of New York. Somebody said to me, "Well, you know, white Americans, especially white American Christians, they need to understand black America is not just going to get over it." And my response was to say, "Okay, I hear that. Let's define what it is." When we say, "Let's just get over it," or "We're not going to get over it," what exactly are we talking about? Are we saying that black Americans are not going to get over the slave trade back in the day? Okay, that's one thing. Are we saying that black America is not going to get over, I don't know, the killing of Martin Luther King Jr.? It was an atrocity. I understand it if some people haven't gotten over it. Are we saying that black America is not going to get over the fact that a young man can be investigated in Ferguson, Missouri, and found to have assaulted a police officer? Is that what they can't get over? Is that what we're not getting over? We need to define what it is. And I would like to think that there's a critical mass of us, even in the Christian community, that are willing to ask those tough questions and really try to clarify what is it that we are talking about. Similar with this new polling data here from Christianity Today among evangelical Christian pastors. When a white pastor and a black pastor say the gospel does or does not mandate racial reconciliation, what does reconciliation mean? I mean, certainly it's a theme in the New Testament that God wants to be reconciled to us and wants us reconciled to him. He wants us reconciled one to another. But what does reconcile mean? Does reconciliation, biblically speaking, theologically speaking, does that cut across racial barriers? I would certainly think it does. But does reconcile mean we all get along, we all think the same, we live together in the same neighborhoods? Does reconcile mean that we all have the same standard of living, we all have the same lifestyle, our kids all go to the same school? Those are things that have yet to be answered. So I will see to it that we get this article. This is well worth reading, by the way. I'm not being critical of Christianity Today and the individuals who have undertaken this survey. But I hope you'll with me, join me in trying to be mindful of the disconnect here, not only among racial groups, but among other categories of citizens as well in our culture. That's how split up, that's how fractured I believe our culture is becoming. Our common language, defining what it is that we're talking about at any given time, it is not to be taken for granted. It's not as easily discerned as it maybe once was in previous eras. But kudos to Christianity Today for being willing to publish this article. It is very, very eye-opening information. And we'll make sure to get a link to that on our website at myfaithradio.com. Stand by for more. It's now 6:26 on the Faith Radio Network. As we continue, let's look ahead to what's coming up in the noon hour today. That's when a program called Connecting Faith airs. We'll give you a little sneak preview when we come back. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network, Connecting Faith happens weekdays 12 noon Central Time. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem was in the house, and it was another edition of Ask the Professor, University of Northwestern St. Paul professors Mark Muska and Brad Stickler were with Neil Stavem, and they tackled your questions about theology and the Bible. Here's part of that discussion.
How do we respond as Christian parents when our kids ask us about Santa?
The question of Santa is one that a lot of people wrestle with, and people come down on both sides of the fence. Some of the concerns are, the main one that I hear, I don't know if you guys have a different experience, but the main one I hear is that Santa distracts us from Christ. That's one aspect of it. And the second aspect is that it sets up a pattern of parents telling their children things that aren't true. We call that lying sometimes,
yeah,
too.
Some people have said that, yes. Yeah.
So the question of Santa, you know, he is the sort of Coca-Cola version that we have now does have historical roots in a real person who lived an exemplary Christian life. And if you choose to emphasize that as a means of remembering somebody who can be an example for us on worshiping Jesus and living our lives for him, I think that can be a way to do it. But I have some problem with the dissembling as well about, you know, saying there's this man and he's a sort of, he's really a kind of mini God with his all-seeing ways, you know, seeing you when you're sleeping and when you're awake he keeps track of your good deeds, yeah, and your bad deeds, and if your good deeds outweigh your bad deeds, you'll get a game system instead of coal, and those sorts of things are a little troubling. So whatever we say about Santa, the main thing is that we want to be focusing on Christ, because this is the pivotal event in the history of salvation, one of a couple pivotal events in the history of salvation. And our message as a church about what Christmas is for needs to be revolving around the coming King, the promised Messiah, the one that the angels celebrated and the wise men came and worshipped, the one who fulfilled hundreds of years of prophecy and expectation for the people of Israel. If our focus is something other than that, and there's a commercial out right now that I find actually very disturbing, and I won't name the company, but the whole premise about it is the whole world is revolving around opening a gift and seeing what I got, and it becomes about me and what I'm going to get and what shiny new toys, and that's the furthest thing from exalting Christ. So I think that, you know, every parent needs to thoughtfully come to a conclusion on their own. But I would just encourage whoever is trying to mull through this to make sure that the emphasis is on Christ. And anything else has to absolutely be secondary. And I don't have a rule about it beyond that, but that would be my advice.
That was yesterday on Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem. Coming up today at 12 noon Central Time, Joe Rathmanner hosts the program. She welcomes guest Holly Milton to talk about Holly's new book, Follow My Lead. Connecting Faith, 12 noon Central Time on this, the Faith Radio Network. We hope to see you there. Good morning. It's now 6:31. I'm Austin Hill. SRN News on the way next. It's 6:35. Good morning and welcome. Friday underway. This is the Faith Radio Network. Glad you're here. I'm Austin Hill. Are you planning on seeing a motion picture, perhaps, on Christmas Day or maybe a day or two afterwards? You realize there are some new films that will be released on Christmas Day, but what kind of a year has it been for motion picture and for the cinematic arts, as it were, for that kind of question? There's only one person I know to ask, Bob Waliszewski. He heads up the Plugged In Movie Review. You hear those here on the Faith Radio Network, and you can find him at Plugged In. He joins us on our guest line. Bob, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Austin, hey, it's great to be back on the show.
Good to be with you. We'll get to the new films to come, but question, some top films for you over the course of this last year. What kind of year has it been? What did you really enjoy?
You know, I often say that the pendulum kind of split down the middle this past year, actually the past few years. And so Hollywood's given us some of the worst, but they've also given us some of the best. And I've been focused on the family now going on 24 years, and all except my first year here have been involved in the plugged-in department. So it's been a pretty good year. For instance, on the secular side, I liked Bell. I liked The Giver. I liked Dolphin Tale 2. I liked 100 Foot Journey. I liked a little Bollywood film that came out called The Lunchbox, which no one has probably ever heard of. But on the faith side of the equation, there was When the Game Stands Tall. We had Son of God came out, God's Not Dead, Heaven is for Real, a DVD, straight to DVD, I think. I think it maybe played in a few handful of theaters, but it was basically a straight to DVD called A Long Way Off, a little cute film, a modern retelling of The Prodigal Son. So even the secular press dubbed this as kind of the year of the Bible film. So there really were a lot of them.
That's very interesting. I had not heard that. What are we to make of a motion picture that is come out? I believe this was released early on in the fourth quarter. It's still fairly new. Exodus. What's going on there?
Yeah, Exodus, Gods and Kings, Ridley Scott's new film, came out last weekend. It didn't do very well, and probably because, like Noah, which came out in March of this year, it took way too many liberties for those of us who care that a biblical film would be stay respectful and faithful to the scriptures. Now, it is respectful to a degree, and so it's not let me just back up a little bit. If someone asked me on a scale of 1 to 10, Bob, should I rent the movie Noah, which came out in March, what's your opinion of that? I would give it about a 2 to a 3, so it's pretty a very low score out of 10.
Okay.
But if they said, same question for Exodus, on a scale of 1 to 10, should I go see this film? Should I take my family this Christmas to go see it? I'd give it about a 5 or a 6. Austin, I wish I could give it a 9. Hey, this is such a wonderful faith-building film. You can't miss it. It's not a 9. It's not an 8. It's not a 7. It's somewhere as a 5 or 6. There's some things I like. For instance, when Moses encounters God at the burning bush, he is a changed man thereafter, and I like that. But go down to what I don't like about the film. When Moses encounters God at the burning bush, he's depicted as a 10-year-old boy who has an attitude. Now, God could appear, I guess, any way he wanted to, but I kind of struggled with the 10-year-old boy thing, but I even struggled more with the fact that I never saw God love Moses, never saw his compassion, his slow to anger, compassion abounding in love, which the Bible is so clear on. Nor did I ever see really Moses ever respond to God in love either. Dutiful? He wants to follow him. He wants to go set the people free, the Israelites free. But I never sensed that he really loved God, and that was a bit of a problem for me. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Some people are going to still be able to have a lot to talk about. It could be a faith-building exercise to some degree, but don't expect biblical faithfulness A to Z.
That's very interesting. Bob Waliszewski, you know his voice, you know the name from the Plugged In Movie Review that you hear regularly here on Faith Radio. He's on our guest line on the Faith Radio Network. As you're describing this characterization of Noah and his relationship to God, I can well imagine some very well-intended, and I'm not bashing anybody, but well-intended producers and writers and directors and such that worked on that or maybe similar films, knowing very well that they're with intention communicating to a very Christian audience here in the United States of America, but they're listening to your critique and saying, well, come on, Bob, this is just a little artistic license here, and you're kind of getting hung up on the details, and you're adhering to a scriptural account of this just a little bit too closely. I mean, is that a part of the tension from what you and I may see in a film and say, that's not quite right, and then Hollywood's version of the story that says, hey, it's a creative work in process. Is that part of the deal?
Well, this isn't Hunger Games, and this isn't Harry Potter. If you're going to make those films, I don't quite care if people, take some liberties and say, well, we brought a character into the film that wasn't in the original. You know, whatever you want to do. I'll review it and look at it a lot differently. But when you're making a film based on the Bible, We all that are from the faith perspective want to know that at least you can add what I consider extra biblical material. And in other words, a conversation that we don't know that the Bible says it happened, but it could have easily happened. But
right.
Don't give me something anti-biblical. And when in the Noah movie back in March, for instance, we had rock monsters helping build the ark. It was like, when I saw those, I'm like, oh, come on. Really, we have to have these monster-type things helping? Noah and his family wasn't good enough to build the ark?
Yeah,
so,
right.
But fortunately, there's no rock monsters in Exodus. But, for instance, Zipporah and Gershom, Moses' wife that he meets in Midian, his first son, Gershom, the Bible says that after his burning bush experience, they go with him back to Egypt. Well, in this movie, they don't go back with him. They stay there so that they can have, you know, so Moses can hug his wife at the end of the film and have this sweet family moment. I kind of understand why the director did it, and it's not a major departure from Scripture. It's just kind of like, huh. Could have done it the other way,
right?
And again, those are the lack of faithful. Moses chisels out the first set of commandments in this movie. The Bible says he chiseled out the second set, but the first set of commandments God chiseled out and wrote with his finger the commandments on the tablets of stone. Well, that's not how it takes place in this movie. It would have, again, been easier to just keep it the way the Bible said it.
Yeah, very interesting. Bob Olszewski, PluggedIn.com is where you find him. Bob, final question, maybe a real big film that you're looking forward to in the new year.
You know, I'm really looking to a film that comes out next fall. We don't have a date on it. It's called Same Kind of Different as Me. It's based on a book that my wife and I have enjoyed a lot. It's on the faith side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many of our listeners right now go, oh, I've read that book. Well, you'll be happy to know, they're working on a film. Greg Kinnear is in it. Renee Zellweger is in it. And it comes out in the fall. And I'm really looking forward to that film.
Very interesting. We'll keep our eyes on that. Hope you'll come back after the first of the year and maybe tell us more if we can make that happen.
Love to.
Very good. Blessed Christmas and New Year's season to you and yours, Bob. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
You too, Austin. God bless.
It's now 6:44 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us for Friday. Sound 6:46. Good morning, and thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Network, listener-supported Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, and it's Friday morning. We're so glad you're with us. Still to come, George Frazier, our great friend George Frazier, professional addictions counselor and co-host of the Real Recovery Program, which you hear on the weekends here on Faith Radio. He'll join me into the 7 o'clock hour to talk about the struggles of those recovering from addictions at this time of the year, the holiday season. We'll get to that. Also, my very special guest, George Barna, researcher George Barna, to talk about his brand new book, U-Turns. That's coming up within the next hour here on Faith Radio. We're asking for your support. We are so close to closing in on our goal of sponsorship for the Angel Tree program, a group that reaches out to children who are estranged from mom and dad because of incarceration during the Christmas season. The number to call, of course, 1-855-59-ANGEL, 1-855-59-ANGEL. We're asking for your support. We hope you'll make that call and step up. Just to give you yet another taste, so to speak, of the good work of Angel Tree, let's listen now to the story of Raquel.
Her father, Ernie, was in and out of prison a lot. But Raquel, as a young girl, found hope in a relationship with Jesus Christ. And she spent many hours in prayer for her father. Still, it wasn't easy. It's tough for a little girl to be ashamed of a man she should be looking up to. During her high school years, new emotions surfaced. Resentment, anger, emotions which seemed to peak at Christmas. Could a gift from Angel Tree soften her heart?
When I was 15, my dad had been in prison for about a year. And during Christmas, we had Angel Tree come to our house. And so my younger sisters were very excited, anticipating presents coming. That's all they were focused on. Yay, we're getting presents. I was a little excited too, but I was a little reserved. I didn't want to be too excited about it because I didn't want to need people. When they came, they were very warm. They were open. They gave us the gifts, and they wanted to make sure that we knew that these gifts were from my Father.
That experience, Angel Tree gifts from Angel Tree volunteers, reminded Raquel that God does care. And then seeing her sisters and searching her own heart, she realized how critical it is for a girl to know that her daddy in prison has not forgotten her.
In fact, that impacted me so much that from that point on, while I was in college and whenever our church has Angel Tree, I want to support Angel Tree as well.
But even as Raquel remained committed to Christ and his work, she made a new discovery. Maybe, despite her years of prayer, her father was a lost cause. She decided she wanted nothing more to do with him.
I quit praying for him. I had found out some information about my father, and that made me more angry. Before that time, I was willing to accept him. I wanted to get to know him and spend time with him. I had that desire deep down inside. And I thought, I have been praying for him for these 15 years, and nothing has changed. And so why continue praying?
2 years passed, and Raquel, now a young woman starting a career, was doing her best to forget her father. Then, one day at her mother's home, in an instant, Ernie came back into their lives.
We got a phone call from a friend to turn on the TV, and there was a news report about my dad. Ernest A. Medina shot several times for wielding a gun, resisting arrest, in critical condition. And right at that moment, God began to soften my heart for my dad, and I was very shaken because he could die. And I was thinking, what if he doesn't become a Christian, or maybe he will become a Christian right before he moves on. So,
but he didn't die. And what's more, the whole experience reconnected Raquel and her father. Somehow he caught a glimpse of a reason to live, and Raquel had a new resolve to pray for him. And she did, fervently.
And my father did become a Christian. God changed him, softened his heart, and called him by name. And he is now a believer. And even though I stopped praying for my dad, even though I gave up on him, God was faithful. And God saved him. And I can have a relationship with a godly father. And I don't think I ever dreamed of having that with my father. God answered my prayers beyond my expectations.
It took years, decades, but this father and daughter have been reunited through Christ, and that's worth celebrating. Still, Raquel has another pain, another ache that needs to be healed.
I think about all the little girls that have their daddy in prison, and my heart goes out to them. I ache for them because what is their understanding or their view of God as a result of their father?
We asked Raquel, what keeps her going? What empowers her? Her answer really didn't surprise us.
I have a life verse. It's Philippians 2, 3, and 4. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem each other better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. And I think Angel Tree is an example of that. You're putting the interests of these children above your own.
Raquel's story proves that with prayer, love, and a dose of Angel Tree, even desperate situations can be turned around. Will you rise to the challenge of Raquel's life verse from Philippians chapter 2? Will you hold the interest of these kids above your own?
Make that call today, won't you? It's a toll-free call, 1-855-59-ANGEL, 1-855-59-ANGEL. Just a quick phone call, won't take much time, and very few dollars, but you can make the difference in the life of somebody like Raquel. You can change the trajectory of an entire family lineage in some cases. 1-855-59-ANGEL, that's the number. We're asking for your support. We're closing in on a goal that we've set for us here at Faith Radio and our listeners to support the Angel Tree program. It's now 6:52. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. As we continue, let's look ahead, see what's coming up with Susie Larson this afternoon on her Live the Promise program. We'll do that next. It's 6:54 on the Faith Radio Network. Live the Promise with Susie Larson. That airs weekday afternoons, live real time, 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time. And Susie's program, of course, airs again today at 3 o'clock. Yesterday on the program, well, it was the great giveaway. You've probably heard her talking about that. And, well, let's just listen in to part of that conversation from yesterday. Check it out.
Jocelyn's calling in from Lake Benton. Jocelyn, welcome.
Hi.
Oh, my goodness. How old are you?
Seven.
Seven. Nice to meet you. Did you do the great giveaway?
Yes.
You did? Can you tell me what you did?
Well, last year we came up with a project we called Love, Life, and Light, and we make sculptures or pictures and then sell them, and then we take the money and then buy toys for kids in need.
Oh, my. Thank you. You are setting such a good example for the rest of us, Jocelyn, and so brave of you to come on the radio. God bless you, honey. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. 877-933-2484. Joyce is calling in from South Dakota. Joyce, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you so much, Susie.
Absolutely. How are you today?
I'm great.
Good.
Thank you.
Tell me about your great giveaway.
Well, I challenged myself as well as someone else to do Ann Voskamp's challenge of naming and recording 1,000 blessings. So I put my $15 toward a copy of her book and a small journal, and I have a copy of that book for myself that I had read previously, and purchased a small journal for myself. So I am doing her challenge and recording each day blessings that I see God showering on me each day, and then the copy of her book and the other copy of the journal I've sent to someone incarcerated, and I know someone who is a believer, just is having issues with alcohol, and I wrote in a card that my friend was certainly welcome to use the journal any way she chose, but I invited her to do the challenge with me, and you see how God is showing up even in the most bleak environments. You know, even in a prison.
Wow.
And so I am thoroughly enjoying the challenge of, you know, recording each day little blessings that come my way and having fun writing them in a little journal. And I'm just going to be very curious, you know, to see what this other gal is doing on her end. And I know that she's being blessed in prison. I know there's Celebrate Recovery. There's therapy, you know, in a letter she just mentioned some good things happening. So I'm thinking that God is blessing her even in that environment.
That's from yesterday's Live the Promise, a very special edition of Susie Larson's program as she conducted the great giveaway. Now, coming up today on Live the Promise, Susie welcomes David Garrison to the show as they talk about his new book, A Wind in the House of Islam. Should be very interesting indeed. A Wind in the House of Islam, author David Garrison, joined Susie Larson for Live the Promise. Coming up this afternoon, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time, that'll be live real time. Of course, you can always find Susie Larson and her program, as you can always find this program, on our mobile-friendly website at myfaithradio.com. It's now 6:58. I'm Austin Hill, honored to have you with us. Now, coming up into the next hour, you want to, don't miss this, pollster, researcher, George Barna, on the future of the United States of America and the church's role to play. Talk about that, plus much more just ahead. This is the Faith Radio Network. SRN News on the way in seconds. Stay with us.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning. It's now 7:04 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. So glad to have you with us. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to Life. Coming up in moments, we'll check in with our great friend, George Frazier, professional addictions counselor, but he also co-hosts the Real Recovery Talk program. You hear that both on Saturdays and Sundays here on the Faith Radio Network. George Frazier, a self-described recovering person himself. We'll talk about some of the frailties during the holiday season, the upheaval, the disruption in our schedules, family and friends being brought together sometimes even when we don't want to be, the upheaval that that causes some who are just maybe infantile early on in their recovery process from addictions. That could be a big deal if you have ever been a recovery person yourself, if you know somebody who has struggled with chemical dependency or other kinds of addictions. This can be a difficult time of the year. So George Frazier gets us caught up on that, and I'm sure we'll have some great suggestions for us. Also, just about half an hour away, we will be talking with a guy named George Barna, head of the Barna Group. It used to be called the Barna Research Group, but it's just the Barna Group. And Barna has a brand new book out called U-Turns. And he's proposing, he along with another very scholarly gentleman named David Barton from a nonprofit group called Wall Builders. You may be familiar with that. Barna and Barton have written this fascinating book about restoring the United States of America and the things that the United States of America needs to do to turn itself around. And it's not just Barna polls, it's Gallup polls, it's other research polls. Have for a number of years, probably close to a decade, but certainly in the last 5 years or so, repeatedly, one opinion poll after another says Americans believe their country is headed off the rails. Americans believe that the United States of America itself is headed in the wrong direction. That seems to be pretty universally held, a universally held belief across all sectors of our society. But what does it take to turn things around and get us moving in the proper direction? That's the tougher question, and oftentimes there is not clarity or agreement on that. George Barna, I know, he'll be telling us that actually restoring the traditional two-parent family is essential to getting the country back on the wrong, right track, and restoring the presence and the influence of the Christian church and Christian churches in America. That, too, is essential. And this is a man who comes at these things from a very scholarly sort of vantage point. And so I hope you'll stick around for that. George Barna in just about half an hour from now on his book, U-Turn. So stand by for that. When we come back, we'll check in with George Frazier from the Real Recovery Program here on the Faith Radio Network. Let's get some helpful hints for the recovery person over the holiday season. We'll talk about it next. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's now 7:09, Friday morning underway. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Weekday morning, 6 till 8 is when I'm here. Thank you for being with us. It's an honor to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8. George Frazier is co-host of a program called Real Recovery, where they get real honest and real candid about real human struggles. That is broadcast live, real time, on both Sundays and Saturdays. New Saturday edition to the program. You can always find the program at myfaithradio.com, and we usually find George Frazier on our guest line here on our morning program Fridays at about this time. Welcome back, George. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Austin. How you doing today?
I am well, thank you for asking, and I hope you and yours are also. And I know coming up this Friday on the program, yourself and your co-host Bill Arnold, one of the things you'll be addressing is food addiction over the Christmas holiday season, when we are compelled to eat and food seems to be everywhere for the person who's got a compulsive issue with eating. This is especially difficult. Tell us about that, if you would.
Well, you know what we do on Real Recovery, Austin, is we try to eliminate the little fun that we have left in our lives, and we're going to come after your eating food at Christmas this year. We're going to talk a little bit about that, a lot of us, myself, I know I overindulge food-wise, and I gotta be honest, Austin, I eat like I drink. I can be a binge eater on the holidays. And our guest, Dr. Rona Epstein, was raised Jewish, had an eating disorder. She's a PhD psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Became a Christian, excuse me, overcame her eating disorder, and works with thousands of people, best-selling author. She's one of our favorite guests. And so we're going to look at this. How can we get through the holidays without overindulging, without abusing good things? And frankly, this is an overlooked issue. I think, Austin, if I look at the church community I'm in, obesity is an acceptable sin.
Yeah,
and
it is.
And it's prevalent. And when we hit a certain age, it's real hard not to overindulge in food. So it's a great topic.
It's a great topic, and you're right about that. Whereas we may find it a very offensive and very troubling that somebody has a problem with some recreational drug, or they're given to drunkenness frequently. If we kind of pig out at the church potluck dinner, if we're packing a few extra pounds, we can get by with that. I remember, as you know, I grew up with an alcoholic father, and my parents both, and my parents both killed themselves in their addictions, and my mom struggled for most of my life with what we would call today as an eating disorder. She was very horribly overweight from about the time that she gave birth to me, or shortly thereafter, and that really brought about her death later in her 70s. And I remember my father, during a period of time when he was in recovery and staying sober, I remember he was an alcoholic, and I remember him telling me, "Hey, your mom's got a much more difficult route than I have." He said, "I can quit drinking altogether. I can live just fine without without drinking alcohol, so far as I can do what it takes to stay sober." He goes, "You can't just stop eating altogether. That's a greater challenge. You know, you can cut alcohol out of your life entirely, but you can't cut food out of your life entirely." And I appreciate my dad passing along that little pearl of wisdom when I was about 10, 12 years old or so. But I'm sure that's probably something you've dealt with as you counsel people and advise people who are really struggling in this area.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I'm a recovering cocaine addict, as you know, and it's you stop doing cocaine. But if I have a food addiction, I have to eat every day for my survival. And I know when I first got sober, I put on about 25 pounds. A lot of people do that. We kind of switch addictions and move along the less harmful addict program. But eating is a big problem. And to do it in moderation and do it in a godly way, oh, my gosh, that's a whole nother deal. And you're right. It's prevalent, the food addiction, and we're going to talk about it. This lady is great. And one of the things I love about being on the radio for Real Recovery is we get to talk about real issues with real people and the real solution, which is Jesus Christ. Fabulous, yeah. Fabulous opportunity.
Well, well stated as always. We're looking forward to it. George, I'm going to ask you to, you're always headed off to a Bible study group or something important at this hour on Friday mornings. Can you hold over for a few more moments?
Absolutely, Austin.
Okay. Stand by. I got a couple more questions for you. George Frazier, co-host with Bill Arnold of the Real Recovery Program. These are serious measures. George Frazier has answers and solutions to people's very real dilemmas, especially at this time of the year. We'll continue with him in just a moment. It's now 7:14. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
It's 7:16. Oh, look at that. Now 7:17. Wow, you're up to date by the second here on Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings, 6 till 8. George Barna, author of a brand new book called U-Turns. He joins us in about 20 minutes from now. So stand by for that. Our great friend George Frazier, part of our family, if you will, here at Faith Radio. He, along with Bill Arnold, they co-host the Real Recovery Program that you hear on the weekends. George Frazier is a professionally trained addictions counselor, among other things, and he's on our guest line. George, this can be a challenging time of the year for, I'll say, the recovering person, especially somebody who's maybe new in their recovery process, coming out of a chemical dependency or an addiction, in as much as the Christmas season, the holiday season, it creates disruption in our routine and in our lives. And oftentimes for the recovery person, having a well-established routine and maintaining that routine is really, really paramount. It's important for a lot of us, but especially when you're coming out of some destructive behaviors. What advice do you offer to the recovering person, or even for those of us who are friends and family members of recovering persons, when we are kind of, as much as we want to say this is a happy season, it's a season of disruption? What would you say about that?
Well, I think you're exactly right, and a lot of us in recovery have a routine, a program that works very well, and it can just get disrupted. How does that happen? Well, we go back into old situations with family members where we might have some unresolved issues, and we have a tendency to play our role. And maybe our role was the problem child or the one with the problem. I want to have a plan for going back into a situation that's my old neighborhood, maybe of using and behaving, and I want to have a new plan. And maybe I need to write this down on what I'm going to do, that maybe I need to take something in with me, water or pop or whatever. Also, I want to have a route of escape. I always try to drive, Austin, even 30 years into recovery, wherever I go, mm-hmm. in case I need to leave, I can do that. And I would hope people would talk with their community beforehand about what their concerns are. And hey, let's not forget, let's talk to the Lord about this. Give me the power, strength, and desire to get through this situation in a way that honors you, Jesus, that helps me stay sober and honors you and carries the message that I'm a new person in Christ, and I want my family to see that, and I want to act that way.
That's great suggestions. What about the person who is really reticent, very uncomfortable going back and seeing certain family members who maybe bring out some of the worst in us? And that sounds so unchristlike, so unchristian to say, hey, my own family, my own blood relatives can be problematic. But I think if we were all honest about that, probably many of us, if not most of us, would say, yeah, you know, there are some of those kinds of scenarios in my family. For the person who says, I'd prefer not to go back, but I feel obligated to, I'm sure you've negotiated that situation yourself before. What do you say about that?
Well, excuse me, that is an excellent, excellent question, Austin. Number one, I don't have to go. And I can bounce this off people that are in my life that I really don't have to go if it's going to be that dangerous. Number two, I can do a really respectful appearance where I'm going to go by, maybe exchange gifts, say hi, and go and leave. You can always leave. I don't have to do anything. And if it's going to interfere with my recovery and my walk, maybe it's not a great situation for me to go to. God has put people in my life that I can bounce that off of, and there's no have-tos in this for me.
Well, it's very well stated. Excellent suggestions and real wisdom from a man who knows George Frazier. He and Bill Arnold co-host Real Recovery, Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. You know, I hate to say this. This is not in the script for the show this morning, but I'm not sure exactly what time the program is broadcast on Saturdays. We just began a Saturday broadcast of the program. I know Sunday's at 5. What time do we find you on Saturdays?
Well, this is great. We both look stupid. I think it's 1 o'clock. I've got a lifelong string of failures, which is why I became a Christian. I think it's at 1 o'clock, but I really don't know. It just
No, that's my week. Program, Saturdays at 1.
Well, see, there you go. That's a great program. Now, see, if we had Bill on, Bill would know.
Okay, so, well, I'm sorry. I believe it's this just into the news center. I think it's Saturday at 3 p.m. Did I hear that correctly, Aaron? Okay, yes,
that's
it's 3 p.m. Central Time.
Austin, 3 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 p.m. Saturday. That's what I meant to say all along. Listen, you can prepare, as you well know. You get all set for the broadcast. You have all your notes and everything on the computer screen. And then some of it just goes from memory. And this time I didn't have either one. But anyway, Saturday's 3, Sunday's 5 p.m. It's called Real Recovery from Bill Arnold and George Frazier. George, always a pleasure. If we don't talk beforehand, I hope you and your family have a very blessed Christmas. And thanks for what you do, and we'll look forward to talking again soon. Notes or no notes?
Hey, Austin, thank you. You have a great Christmas, too.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Caught us both off guard. I appreciate his candor. All right, it's now 7:23 here on Faith Radio, and Friday morning is well underway. We're still working towards our goal, by the way, of sponsoring kids and families through the Angel Tree program. We're getting really, really close, but we sure could use your help. The toll-free number if you want to come on board and support children who are estranged from mom and dad because of incarceration here at the Christmas season. It's 1-855-59-ANGEL. 1-855-59-ANGEL. We'll hear more about the great work of Angel Tree coming up later this hour. Also, my guest George Barna with his new book, U-Turns, in just about 12 minutes from now. So stand by for that. On the way, Breakpoints. That's just ahead on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, it's now 7:34, and this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. America needs to get back to its roots. When was the last time you had somebody suggest that to you? Has it been a while? Fact of the matter is, it seems as over the last several years, one opinion poll after another suggests that a majority of Americans believe we're on the wrong course. Of course, righting the ship, what exactly is the right course for America? That remains to be seen, and there's a lot of division about that. My next guest has written a book on this subject. He's a native New Yorker. His name is George Barna. He's filled executive roles in private enterprise, in government, and in ministry. In 1984, he founded the Barna Research Group. It's now known as the Barna Group. It's become a leading market research firm focused on the intersection of faith and culture. You probably know his work very well. His latest book, entitled U-Turn, Restoring America to Its Strength of Its Roots. George Barna, welcome to Faith Radio. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Give us your latest assessment in terms of how Americans feel about the current direction of the country. A lot of polling organizations pose a question or similar questions to that effect. Your group has done that as well. How do Americans feel about our current trajectory?
By and large, very few people are really comfortable with where we're at. I mean, there are a lot of different questions we ask related to that. But we know that right now about 75% are trying to find a more meaningful way of life because they're struggling with everything that's happening around them. About two-thirds of Americans believe that the country currently is in a state of decline. Similarly, 63% argue that things in the nation are generally headed in the wrong direction. When they think about the future, they're worried. 77%, more than 3 out of 4, say they're concerned about the future. Most of them do not believe that America's children will be able to lead as comfortable or as successful or as fulfilling a life as they have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the numbers go on and on and on. Two-thirds of the nation don't believe that the government is the solution. They think that the government will never change for the better. So people are really looking for different kinds of solutions today.
If indeed children of today, however you define that demographically, if children today grow up to have a less prosperous lifestyle than their parents and grandparents, will that be an American first for our country, that a successive generation doesn't grow in prosperity?
It will. You know, there have always been periods of history where there have been bumps in the road because of wars that we were engaged in or the up and down cyclical nature of the economy. But when you look at the span of a person's life and gauge how did they start and how did they end, what you find is that throughout the 200-plus year history of the United States, people's lives continually seem to get better. The nation grows in many different ways. But, you know, when you look at it, whether it's economically or in other ways, yes, things have gotten better. So this appears to be the first period where things are not necessarily going to be on the upswing. Mm-hmm. For, you know, multiple decades consecutively.
George Barna, his new book is called U-Turn, Restoring America to the Strength of Its Roots. We'll talk about the roots in just a few moments. George, you're no stranger to history. You're a student of it. Is the decline of the United States of America, as you and I have always known it over the course of our lifetimes, is that inevitable at some point? Maybe not necessarily now, but is a decline necessarily going to happen at some point in your view?
Well, I think there are a couple of ways of looking at that, but certainly one way is to recognize that America is a unique nation, historically speaking. There has never really been a nation that's had such a prolonged period of prosperity. And so from that vantage point, you would say, well, yeah, it's pretty inevitable. We've had the best run of any nation ever, and it's due to end. On the other hand, there seems to be some discernible reasons as to why we've had that prolonged run of success. And, you know, in the book, David Barton and I argue that it's because there's been this tremendous partnership between family, government, and church.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the founding of the country and what enabled the country to maintain that success over the long haul, we would say it was because we were willing to work at that relationship. Any relationship you want to work, you've got to invest in it. And when you look at what's happening right now, Americans, for whatever reasons, and I think there are a lot of them, have stopped investing in that relationship. And that's, I believe, why we're seeing the deterioration of our nation.
That's very interesting. I want to pick up on something you said a moment ago, George Barna, that I forget exactly the figure that you offered us, but some large percentages of Americans do not believe that our government or governments across the country can solve all our problems. And yet at the same time, this last, we'll see what the new Congress does, but this last election in November notwithstanding, it would seem to me that even over the course of my lifetime, we've been on a pretty steady march towards more and more and more government control over private enterprise, over our private lives. Conservatives, people on the political right, people on the political left, they look to government to solve a whole host of problems. Is there a disconnect between what people say they want from government and what they actually empower?
I think there is, and frankly, I think a large part of the issue is that we've become kind of lazy. I mean, if you look at the numbers that we're producing, you know, 74% say they're dissatisfied with how the nation's being governed. Two-thirds say the government won't change for the better. Almost two-thirds of Americans say they usually wind up being disappointed by the people they vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you've got that kind of a mindset, what that suggests to you is, okay, well, you can't just keep doing what you've been doing and expecting different results. That's insane. So you've got to shift your activity. You've got to change some of your thinking. You've got to take different kinds of action to get different kinds of results. And so if you look at the government and you say, gosh, it's not working in any way, shape, or form, and I've got, you know, pages of numbers that show that in different ways,
mm-hmm.
Well, then what you've got to do is rethink, all right, how do we go about making this work again? Is it different kinds of people? Is it that I get more actively involved? Is it that I get involved in different ways? Is it that I bring other people on the journey with me in ways that I've never done before? There are a lot of different options, but you know, so much of it has to do with understanding, first and foremost, so what made the nation great and how do we restore some of those roots and then continue to build in a positive way upon them.
Very interesting. George Barna is on our guest line. His new book, U-Turn, Restoring America to the Strength of Its Roots. He's with us here on Faith Radio. You note that one of the key areas that must be addressed in restoration of our nation is the restoration of the family. Where are you going with that? What do you have in mind?
Well, again, when you look historically at why did the family matter and what enabled it to make a positive difference, there are basic building blocks that are in place. And what we've got today is a society that seems intent upon removing those building blocks, redefining what family is, taking away the foundations that we built on in the past. Well, you have to understand that every change you make triggers another series of changes. And if you're going to be intelligent and strategic about those changes, you've got to study the data, you've got to project ahead and say, okay, where is this going to leave us? Are we going to be better off under those circumstances than we were previously? All the evidence that we have indicates that by redefining the family, by taking away rights from the family,
mm-hmm.
by changing the way that parents are allowed to raise their children, by changing the way that we educate children about who they are, about our society, by taking away religious freedoms as part of that mix, all of these things, when you change all of that, you, by definition, change the possible outcomes that you could have. And so what we're suggesting is, all right, well, let's be smart about this. And say, you know what, we tried some things, they're not working, There's no dishonor in going back and saying, you know, we tried this other approach before. Let's return to that. Yes, maybe we want to change it, update it a little bit, but wholesale redefinitions are not working for us. Let's rethink the strategy.
Do you believe there's consensus in the country, maybe not uniformly, but some critical mass of Americans who agree that, shall we say, affirming one-parent families, penalizing two-parent families, these kinds of things, obliterating distinctions between the genders for that matter, is there consensus that those things aren't working and we need to reverse course?
You know, one of the interesting things to me as a researcher is that on the one hand, you've got people's instincts, where they look about them, they judge some things based on their personal experiences. And their experiences are saying, yeah, you know what, this isn't working. But then, how is it that we actually define the totality of reality? Well, by and large, we become a society that relies upon the media to define that reality for us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that disconnect, that conflict between what we're personally experiencing and what we believe based on that, what the media is displaying to us and how they're spinning the nature of that reality. Americans right now are in an uncomfortable position where they're trying to reconcile these two competing perspectives about what reality looks like, what reality feels like, where we are and where we're going. And so it'll be interesting over the next few years. I think that right now is a very, very pivotal time
mm-hmm.
for Americans, as Americans try to figure out, yeah, what is real, what is right? Am I being sold a bill of goods by the media that's not really the way things are? Do I need to rely more upon my personal insights and experiences, or should I take the perspective, the macro perspective that's being fed to me by the media?
George Barna, he's our guest. His new book, U-Turn, Restoring America to the Strength of Its Roots. Fascinating things to think about. We'll continue with George Barna in just moments. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Stay with us. Good morning. It's South 747. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Can America make a U-turn? My guest, George Barna of the Barna Group. His new book is called Restoring America to the Strength of Its Roots. He indeed suggests we can make a U-turn. George, one of the issues you and your co-author, David Barton, another very thoughtful, scholarly gentleman, one of the issues you raise in the book is the restoration of, and according to the press materials and the way it appears in your book, the restoration of the Christian Church, capital C. And I don't think that's a mistake. You're calling on evangelical Christians, I presume, specifically, to be restored, as it were. Where are you going with the restoration of the Christian church, specifically?
You know, that's a really long conversation, Austin. But I mean, in short, what we've got to recognize is, number one, most of our local churches are led by good people, but they're not leaders by gifting and calling. And so their primary hope and dream is simply to have a platform to teach. And, you know, one of the ways that drove this home to me in the recent midterm election was I've been working with a group called United in Purpose doing research among theologically conservative pastors
mm-hmm.
across the country. And one of the things that we discovered in that research is when we ask those pastors who love to teach, who believe the Bible conveys truth, who want people to know what's in the Bible, one of the things we found, the vast, vast majority of those pastors believe, more than 90% of them, is every issue you ask them about, whether it's immigration, whether it's tax reform, you know, whether it's abortion, whether it's gay marriage, whatever you want to bring up, most of them believe and will say, yes, the Bible speaks to that issue. But then when we ask them in the surveys, well, have you taught your people in your church what the Bible says about those issues?
Mm-hmm.
What we found is, with the exception of abortion and same-sex marriage, with the exception of those two issues, less than 10% of theologically conservative pastors had preached or taught any lessons in the past 12 months on any of those issues. And then what we do is we expect people to leave the church armed and informed to make a change in the culture. taken the Bible with them, God's ways and principles, and yet the people who are primarily responsible for teaching those things refuse to do so because they think, well, some people don't want to hear that, they're uncomfortable with it, it's going to be controversial, the church is going to lose people. But really, so that's the criteria for what the church is now. Do people like it? Does it make us popular? Do we feel good about it? You know, I mean, if we're really going to be about truth,
mm-hmm.
we've got to have truth tellers, people who are willing to teach truth based on God's word and principles on every issue that we confront every moment of our lives. And
that's
so
very
that's
interesting. Yeah, I see where you're going with that. I back in the 90s, I was a graduate student at a theological seminary located in a university where you once taught as an adjunct professor, I believe, in Southern California. And I was in a philosophy graduate program, but students in MDiv programs, Masters of Divinity, people on a pastoral track, I know in a variety of different ways, they were pretty much taught you should not speak out on these issues of culture, certainly don't have a voice on public policy issues, preach the gospel in as much as it pertains to people's salvation, and don't have a voice on cultural issues. Is that part, that was my experience, is that part of the dilemma here that we've got maybe a generation or more of pastors who have been very intentionally told, don't speak out on things pertaining to the world, the culture?
Absolutely. I mean, the research shows that. And, you know, the way that it tends to get conveyed is, you know what, you are training to be, or you're in place to be a pastor. You're doing a holy work. Don't dirty yourself with that awful political stuff.
Sure.
You know, it's all about compromise. It's, you know, it's just an area where we don't want to go. We rise above that. We're doing something much more significant. You know, and my contention would be, well, you can't do anything significant unless you're going to be down in the trenches where people live, where they have to make decisions on critical issues. And so then when we look at all the data that we get about how people vote and why they vote, if they vote, you know, we find that, well, they say issues are important, but they don't know where the candidates stand on the issues. And that's because they don't really care that much about the issues because they've never been taught what to think about the issues. And so they send people off to state legislatures and city councils and Congress and the White House, and they say, you make those decisions for me. And then the best that they can do is sit back and be a Monday morning quarterback and say, huh, I don't know if I like that choice that you made on my behalf. But they don't even know. And so we really do have to change that model of the church being the church in all dimensions of life, Christians recognizing that you have a vital responsibility. It's a biblically taught responsibility to understand the issues, to be involved in the issues, to vote on the basis of the issues, to be someone who defends a perspective that you believe comes from Scripture.
Is that to say that Christians perhaps have more work to do in terms of discipling people in the faith, but maybe Christians have more work to do themselves in understanding basic civics and maybe even some lessons of world history?
Absolutely. You put it all together, you know, and there's a lot that we have to do. Like I said earlier, I think we've gotten very, very lazy and lethargic. We delegate people to do things for us, and then we turn our back on it because, frankly, when we look at the lifestyle choices of Americans, they're much more interested in their leisure time than they are in any kind of responsibilities that they have to provide and protect that kind of leisure time. And so, yes, we need to understand, well, how did we get this freedom? We need to understand, what does it take to retain this freedom, to protect this freedom? We have to understand, what's it going to take to hand off that freedom to our children? And therefore, what do we need to be teaching them about the very concept of citizenship so that as we pass the baton to them, they can continue to protect it and defend it and prolong it? But we're not doing that right now. We're sitting back. We've got an entitlement mentality saying, you know what? We hired the government to give us money, to give us programs, to give us freedoms, and we expect them. Where are they? Without realizing there is no such thing as government if you're not involved in it.
Sure.
So we've got to change our mindset.
George Barna, his new book entitled U-Turn, Restoring America to the Strength of Its Roots. Let me personally thank you for the time, George, and thank you for saying some difficult things that need to be said and others don't say them so well. I hope you'll come back and join us.
I'd love to do it, Austin. Thanks so much.
It's now 7:55. Very insightful comments from George Barna. Would you like to enter a drawing to win a copy of his book, U-Turn? Call us right now. It's 877-933-2484. We'll put your name in a drawing. We'll draw the winner after the top of the hour. Three copies we have to give away. Call and put your name in the drawing right now. 1-877-933-2484. It's now 7:55. This is Faith Radio. It's now 7:57 on the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here as we get closer and closer to the Christmas season. Well, we're in the season, but Christmas Day on the way coming up next week. And thank you for having been here today. By the way, make sure, please, check back with us later in the day at myfaithradio.com. And we'll have that very insightful conversation with George Barna available to you on our mobile-friendly website coming up just a little bit later in the day. So hope you'll check in there. I'll be back tomorrow afternoon, 1 p.m. Central Time, live real time, for our weekend program, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, where we talk about entrepreneurship and business ownership and making a living even if you can't find a job. Very difficult things like that. We address those from the perspective, from the vantage point of our Christian faith. We see the issues of the economy and business and making a living through the lenses of Christian faith. And we'll have quite a program for you coming up tomorrow. On tomorrow's episode, we'll be exploring more about what I think is accurately described as the emerging freelance services industries. Have you heard about the freelance services industries? Pastors, youth pastors, even folks who work with retirees in the church, you need to know about the freelance services industries. People are making extra money on the side doing good things in the service businesses. We'll talk about that coming up tomorrow on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. I'll also see you back here Monday morning at 6 as we'll talk more about our goals with Angel Tree. Make sure to make that call and sponsor a child today, won't you? 1-855-59-ANGEL. Have a great day, and keep it right here. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.